This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. The Technical Net is run weekly. It's open to all radio amateurs with privileges to transmit in the amateur radio 2-meter band in these here United States of America. Purpose of the net is to discuss amateur radio, obviously, telecommunications, computing, electronics, anything that's related to those things, pretty much anything you want, as long as you tie sort of back to those things. Or one of those things, anyway. So we hope everybody is ready to rock and roll. And let's see what we can do. The way we format this net is to check in a little differently. So your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment, both or none of the above. We do encourage stations who are not asking a question to check in, because we need to kind of know who's out there to help kind of steer the answers to the audience. So having audience awareness is really, really important. So let's get to it. And again, you do not need to be a Barra member to join in the net. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Alpha, please call with your call sign, your name, a question, comment, none, or both. Please call K2BAR. Nothing heard. Stations whose call signs begin with Kilo 2.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO, Jim.
What's listening? Out. Okay, I got K2ZO, and I don't know what your intentions are, Mr. Jim. Good evening to you. And Tony, I got you, but I don't think you have any questions or comments. So let's do that in that order. K2ZO first.
And no questions or comments at this time.
And Tony?
I don't think I have any questions yet. Thank you.
Alrighty. Very good. Welcome aboard, both of you. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2DSL, David, no question.
K2DSL, I have that. Any other Kilos? Any other stations with call signs beginning with Kilo? Any Kilo?
Kilo 2, no question. All
right, Bennett, I got you that time. And no questions or comment. Good evening to you. Any other Kilos? Any other Kilos?
It's KC2PYB. No questions or comments.
Okay, Rich, very good. KC2PYB. Did you transmit before, Richard?
Negative, negative.
Sure. Bennett, what's your QTH?
I am home.
Okay, very good, thank you. Okay, another station was with you, that's what I was asking. Okay, any other stations, please call K2BAR, Kilo stations. I'm sorry, station?
This is KC2TBD. Ron, no questions, no comments.
Okay, very good. Hi, Ron. Very good to hear you. Ron, did you try to check in a couple of times before?
Just once, and just the preceding one. I didn't get through, apparently.
Problem. Okay, very good. Any other Kilos?
Number Zulu 2 Kilo with a question for the net.
And 2K, that's like a Kilo. All right. Very good. Very good, Paul. Good evening. All right, I got you down for a question. Any other Kilos?
K2BAR, this is Stewart, KC2. SQ3, no comments, no questions.
Good evening, Stewart. Okay, very good. Any other Kilos?
K2ZC, Dave, no questions, no comments.
Okay, very good. Hi, Dave. How are you? Any other Kilos? Okay, let's go to Whiskey's. Any Whiskey stations? Your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, comment, both or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
WE2R, Charlie, no questions.
questions or comments.
Evening, Charlie. Anybody else with a whiskey? All right, any Novembers?
And that's 2K Jim. And no question at this point.
Joke, very good. Any other Novembers?
N2VKZ, Gary, no questions or comments.
Good evening, Gary. Welcome aboard. Gary, I think this is the first time you've joined the TechNet, is it, right? Am I right?
Yes, it is. I've never listened before.
Excellent. Well, welcome aboard. All right. Any other Novembers? All righty. Any other stations, any call sign, please call Q2BAR. With your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. All righty. Well, let's go to the question we have from Paul at ZUK, who, by the way, is also a... I don't know if this is the first time. I seem to recall you've checked in before, but... Maybe I'm just brain dead. That could be all. Both could be true. NZ2K, go ahead, Paul. K2BAR, your question.
Good evening, Gordon. This is November Zulu 2 Kilo. I'm new to Hillsdale. I lived in Westwood for a bunch of years. I just moved into my house. Name's Paul. And please pardon the froggy-sounding voice. Fighting a flu-like cold. And I had a question about antenna lengths and stuff like that. And... you know, taking all things into consideration, I'm not really a residential expert on this, but I had a question on, you could take any frequency pretty much, let's just say even a 75-meter dipole, and talking about electrical length and height above sea level. And I just had a quick question or something to think about anyway and see if anybody had any answers on it. I just want to throw it up to the group here if it's all right.
Sure, and there are several people who can probably have comments on this. One thought is, however, did you mean height above of sea level or height above average terrain?
Height above sea level.
Well, all right. God only knows, I mean, for an HF antenna, if you have it low to the ground, you will tend to throw more RF straight up than you will out at the horizon, which can be good for short distance, meaning out to maybe 1,000 miles or so. But if you get it above a quarter wave and a half wave, different things start happening in the pattern, and your angle of radiation goes down and your DX possibilities go up and your short haul suffers. So that could be what might appeal to you in that regard. I'm going to throw it to K2ZO for his thoughts. If he's available, K2BAR.
Yeah, okay, K2BAR, K2ZO. Yes, just as Gordon says, the lower the antenna to the ground. And you know, I don't know what you meant by height above sea level. But we're really talking at right now about height above average terrain. Height above sea level, of course, can be lots of things, depending, but right now you're not going to see any real big differences with an 80-meter antenna unless you get it up real high. So the fact that you have an 80-meter antenna at 40 foot high, it's going to act pretty much like an 80-meter antenna at 30 foot high, and it doesn't start to act differently until you get it to a half wavelength high, which, of course, as we know, is 130 feet. So that's the comments there. I don't know if you're thinking of putting up a dipole or what are you doing, but I would suggest that a simple start-off would be a parallel 80-40 dipole, because that would work over a lot of bands. Back to that.
Okay. Very good. You want to comment on that, Paul?
Yeah, that's kind of the direction I'm going. That actually spins me into another direction. And I have some antennas over here and things to go up, and I think I agree with you, K2ZO, that, you know, difference of 10 feet really isn't going to make a hill of a beans difference when it's low to the ground like that.
again, I'm going to try to ask electrical length of an antenna. If you were to design an electrical length of an antenna on some frequency, say 3800 or something like that, and I'm going to be really exaggerating about this, if you were to calculate out the resonant spot, you know, and what the electrical length it should be, and let's say you're at, you ready for this, 100,000 feet up in the air, and you were to look at it and come up with some answer, how much difference would it be from that point to, let's say, an antenna that's right at sea level, operating on the same frequency? I know there's other things that come into play, you know, there's other things that really have to come into that, you know, when you're at sea level, there's other things happening too, you know, and, but barring that, is the electrical length going to vary that much when you radically change the height of the antenna, how high up it is? I'm not just talking like 100 feet, like I said. So that's just a kind of a far-out question. I don't know. Maybe it's not even worth it, but it was just something I've been thinking about for the last few weeks. And, Gordon, this is actually the first time I'm checking into this net officially. So you have it right. J2BAR and Z2K. But also I want to thank you, the K2ZO and you and whoever else answered before for the antennas here. I have some ideas now. So back to net. NZ2K.
Okay, I think you're confusing some things here. Let me just see if I have it. Couple things. One is, height above sea level means bupkis. It really means very, very little when compared to height above average terrain. You know, as Jim says, as you get the antenna a half wave off the ground, some interesting things start to happen with respect to how the angle of radiation lowers. And below that point, it really doesn't matter a lot. So you can do a couple of things. Number one, the wavelengths are fairly long there. So you can be up on a hillside or a mountaintop, a narrow mountaintop, and have an antenna 10 feet off the ground, and it will look like it's, say it's 1,000 feet off the ground because the rock you're sitting on is 900 feet tall. If, however, you are at 1,000 feet above sea level and you're in a farm field outside of St. Louis, and it's 10 feet off the ground, it's going to be no different than it's 10 feet over water over, you know, over Barnegat Bay. It's the same thing. Now, we won't get into the effects of the grounding effects of water, because that can be a whole other discussion. But fundamentally, your height above the ground, the local ground, is what rules the roost here. Anybody want to comment on that before we move on?
Okay, yeah. So the other question, yes.
Yeah, about the length?
Yeah. When you have an antenna that's real high, as you say, in free space, and you have, made it a certain resonant length, as you approach the ground, you'll need to make it a little bit longer to keep resonance at the same frequency. And you can demonstrate this fact very easily with a dipole. If you have an 80-meter dipole, and now you convert it to, let's say, an inverted V, where you start bringing the ends closer to ground, what happens is that you'll have to make it longer to make it resonant on the same frequency. And that's just a little back to physics there. But it doesn't make all that much difference for the most part if you're going to use a tuner. Back to that.
I have a related question for that, for you, Tim. Especially for bands like 40, 75, and 80, and maybe even 60 meters. If you have a choice for making the wire longer or shorter and letting the tuner do the work, but it's going to be resonant at one end of a band and non-resonant at the other, which way should you go? Shorter and let the tuner do work that way, or longer and let the tuner work the other way?
Well, in many cases, you may have a situation where you don't have the room, say 80 meters. But there's a big advantage in, say, making the thing, say, resident on 80 CW, and then using the tuner to go on up into the phone band. The efficiency is no big deal. You wouldn't notice any difference as to whether you had, let's say, cut it for the phone band. However, one of the big advantages is that it allows you to use one control in a tuner. Think about it. If you have it set up at 80 CW, and now you move up into the phone, for the most part, if you've got a three-component tuner, all you have to do is rotate one reactance to move right off the band, where if you have it cut for the center of the band, the sign of the reactance changes whether you go up or down, and now you have to have a whole different tuning scheme for CW or phone. Just a little operating convenience.
So when in doubt, cut it for, you know, 35, 25, and then use your, my guess is it'd be your capacitor, your output capacitor, to tweak it for 3950.
Yeah, you know, then you could just, you know, if you've got like a T-type tuner, and you can set it up so that you're usually only using one capacitor. Or one element, let's say, to tune it. For example, you know, when you think about it, you know, an antenna, an inverted V, has an impedance of about 35 ohms. That's what my antenna is, has an impedance of 35 ohms. So at the resident point, you'll still never get a 1-to-1 SWR. So I use the antenna tuner to make that change from 50 to 35 at the resident point, and of course, when it's non-resident, well, you just throw the extra reactants in to do it. But people think that every antenna is going to be 50 ohms. In many cases, it's not even close to that. That could add.
That's correct.
Okay.
Very good. That's useful info, to say the least. All righty. Let's see. Anybody else have any comments before I send it back to Paul?
Yeah, that's okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
Sort of theoretical question. Vertical antenna. Say if you had a quarter wave vertical with a very nice ground system versus, say, a 5/8 wave antenna with a similar ground system, how would that affect the takeoff angle? I assume the 5/8 would be a much lower angle. Is that not correct?
Yep, certainly somewhat lower. Yeah, absolutely. Jim, did you want to say something about that, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Very much different, having experimented with a 5/8 wave at 20 meter versus a quarter. Also, the impedance is, although it's reactive, the impedance is higher. So, you know, for some part it might be a little easier to match it. But a 5-wavelength antenna will usually be better for DX than a quarter wave antenna.
So why, when they build four squares, do they build them with quarter waves on 20 and not 5/8?
Because there's other things going on where they've got to match.
Ah, okay. That makes sense, yeah. In other words, it becomes too much fun, if you will, to match, or too much of a problem, as the case may be. All righty. Any more comments from anybody? Or questions, for that matter? Okay, one for Jim, real quick, and I'll hand it to Paul. So a 5/8 is easier to match, and it will have a lower angle of radiation than a quarter wave?
Well, it's a higher impedance, but it's a little bit more reactive. But a true quarter wave with a good ground plane has an impedance of only about 12 ohms, which is going to require some really big capacitors to match. So that's the problem there.
What happens if you you fed it with a 4-to-1 network at the base?
Stepped it down? Yeah, you could do that. In fact, that's what they do with some commercial antennas. In fact, there's one described in QST this month that does exactly that.
Ah, crack open that part of the new QST. Very good. That's interesting. Alrighty. Let me see. I'm just trying to think what else. Well, that answers my questions, I guess, and most everybody else's. Paul, do you have any more comments, questions, comments, confusions, whatever?
I'm wondering if you're mobile. You sound like you're mobile. I hear something rattling around in the background. Maybe it's your mic there, Gordon. No, everything was handled quite well here. I'm very impressed, and I've learned some stuff tonight, and I appreciate the sharing of the knowledge, and actually I got more than what I thought I was going to get for answers, which is great. I mean, you know, I got a heck of a lot more information, and I love listening about antennas and discussing the theories of them a little bit. That's what I'm about. I really don't have any place or space for amplifiers, so I'm going to go with antennas, and I might even do a couple different things. So, back to net. Thanks a lot, guys. I'm going to be listening out here. I don't think I have much of a voice left, so sorry about this. K2BAR and everybody else, thanks again. I think it was Jim, too. Thanks. And NS2K, nice to hear you. And everybody else listening, this is NZ2K, Paul here in Hillsdale, New Jersey. Hopefully, next time I talk with you guys, I'll sound better.
All right, yeah, I have a question about everybody's ham shack, what they use. My various parents. So let's hold that for a little bit. And first of all, before I go to the other, I have another vertical question, but for HF and possible application to VHF. But in the meantime, does anybody else want to join us? This is K2BAR.
May I want to comment, Gordon? Are you mobile? And is KO2 okay?
Yeah, I was mobile. I still am, actually. As I said, I went out for an OSH. Drove all the way to Fairlawn because last week and several times in December we had actually a signal coming from that area of the world that was tying up the repeater, so I just wanted to be available to see if I could get a hold of a point source should it arise again, which it doesn't appear to have been either arising or as persistent. Right. Is that what you were looking for?
All right, the last caller was just asking if you were mobile because you had a lot of rumbling in the background and jiggling and so on.
That's true. Paul did ask that. I was going to ignore it and talk to him offline about it. But since you asked, my guess is others wanted to know. So I figured, you know, I'd provide that information. And I would hate to think that someone would want to embarrass themselves by you know, having an errant transmitter that's so persistent and so precise as to its timing. So we wanted to address that question. And so I think our excursion tonight addressed it. Anyway, any other comments about... I guess there's no more. Anyone want to join the net before I ask my next vertical question? Moving right along. Last weekend, Jim was over by my house on New Year's Day, and or was it New Year's? Yeah, it was New Year's Day, I think, or was New Year's Eve? I can't remember now. New Year's Day, pardon me, on. Anyway, we went out and grabbed a vertical that had been sitting in a pile and brought it up on the deck and tried to identify what it was, what it was about. And once we realized it had a loading kit that looked like it was a base loading kit of some sort that was added on, looked at other features, I took some pictures of the base, which are rather unique, It was eventually determined to be a Mosley RV4C vertical, multi-band vertical. It's got two traps, very nice, very, very nice antenna. And I've cleaned it up, taken it apart, cleaned, got it basically to work. Needs a little more cleanup before I'm willing to put it up on a pole and leave it there, but by and large, it's in pretty good shape. But one of the things that became obvious was how it was fed in cleaning it up. We disassembled it, I disassembled it on Saturday night, and determined that there's like a capacitive sleeve that's several feet long that goes over the main element and actually is insulated from it. So it's capacitively coupled, like a almost like a bazooka kind of antenna. I was wondering if anybody knew about that design and method of feeding, because what they suggest is that you don't need to have radials, and for some of the bands where they say if you want to put radials at it down, you can. There's some really odd lengths. It's not what you might think. It's not a quarter wave or thereabouts. It's something else. So I was wondering if anyone had any experience with the Mosley RV4 or RVX series antenna. They'd be curious. And that type of feed. Don't everybody jump in at once. But anyway, well, the bottom line is that it seems that radials are not required. A ground rod is, but radials are not. So, and the whole feed system is the active element, you know, the driven, if you will, the center conductor of your coax, is actually attached to an outer sleeve that is not electrically connected to the vertical element. It's, you know, held off by insulators that space the two pieces of metal apart, maybe 3/16 of an inch or so. Very interesting.
Yeah, Gord.
Sir.
What length is that antenna electrically?
It's nominally, I mean, you know, at full length, it's nominally a quarter wave on 40.
Capacitively couple that, but you say it's a quarter wave on 40, but what is it electrically?
22 feet plus the however much useful loading you get out of the coil, the two traps.
The reason I ask you that is that one way of making an antenna that does not need radials is to make the antenna element electrically a half wavelength long. However, when you do that, remember what you have is a simple situation that you have with the old little 2-meter antenna where you need to feed it with a matching section. In the case of the little, I forget what you call the thing now. Well, you know the antenna I'm talking about. It's a half wavelength long, fed with a quarter wave and stuff like that. J-pole. Okay. Half wavelength antenna. Or also a Ringo Ranger. You know, what you do is you have a matching section. Now remember, that's a high impedance. So that's what you may be looking at, high impedance matching section that's coupling it in there. Are there any other transformers associated with that?
Nope. The only thing that they had in addition was they had this loading coil that was external to that outer piece that was designed to, I guess, make that that matching section appear longer. But, you know, for 75 and 40, but I, in the literature I read through, people weren't very happy with them. And the people who are most happy with those antennas never tried or did not remain trying to use it on 75 or 80, but were happy with it on 40 and above. So, yeah, I think you might be right that it might be electrically a half wave. That makes sense. I'm going to say that overlaid piece of tubing is about 8 feet. It might be only 6 or 5. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head, but something in that general, area. In fact, you've got me curious. I head home. Maybe I'll check again.
It may be capacitively coupled, and if you remember, the Mosley TA-36 antenna, the driven element was capacitively coupled that way, and the element had to be made slightly longer to cancel the reactants.
Right, exactly. Design of the was it the TA-33 is like that. You betcha. So that could be. But it was certainly fascinating to see. And it's amazing what happened when the trapped moisture between the two layers was vented out of there and defrosted and all sorts of other things, how much better it behaved.
Now, well, that gives you the clue that it's a high impedance, and of course it was being shunted by the moisture.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of worked, but the frequencies were off quite a bit. And, when I dried out the elements and put them back together, gee whiz, resonant frequencies started to look more like amateur radio bands as opposed to shortwave listening bands. Here's a really good question. How does one open, and does one dare open, the traps?
Depends. Some you can, some you cannot. The old TA-33s, I think you could slip the boot off and take the trap apart and clean it up, take the bugs out. But I would assume that there's lots of them that you cannot.
Okay, well, this thing had a piece of aluminum wire coming out and to the outer shell under some sort of, maybe a self-tapping screw, machine screw. And it looked very happy, such that I didn't want to disturb it. It had a cap on one end, the top end, to keep moisture out. I assume that nominally works. They were in amazingly good condition. So we'll say it's a $300 antenna. It's well worth at least taking a peek at and see if I can get it to work. In my very crowded backyard with ground and houses and all sorts of things around it, am I better off elevating this puppy and then taking the recommendation and the short radials?
I would assume that it's going to radiate better if you do that. I'm not sure, but let's say a regular type antenna that had radials on it. If you raised it up a little bit higher, it would work. Probably a little bit better.
Okay. Pretty good. And just get it away from the ground clutter and stuff like that. All right. Pardon me. Yawn, yawn, yawn. Okay. Anybody else have any comments about this?
W2JK.
Welcome aboard. Mr. Gott, how are you?
I just got here, but I recall in one of Bill you're talking about how raising a vertical antenna above ground. Recall in one of Bill Orr's books, they had some statistics that the further you got the antenna above the ground, the less radials you needed. But I think they were still talking about quarter wave radials at that point. And in my case, I have a 20-meter vertical on the roof with 8 radials stretched out to the sides in a equidistant sort of pattern over.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. That's certainly intriguing. Anybody else?
KF2ID. Listen, Gordon, I have a question I wanted to ask, and I can't stay up much later, and I think I can get the answer pretty fast. So may I proceed with your question?
Absolutely, Ben. Welcome aboard.
I have 7,000 here, and I found that in the HF bands, it's shutting itself down at low power outputs at about 30 or 40 watts or something like that. And I know it's not my antenna because I connected a dummy load to it. And it seems to be pretty much independent of frequency. So, and I know my antenna wasn't caused by anything by the antenna because I checked the standing wave ratio of the antenna, and it's okay. So it wasn't that an open antenna caused something. So I wonder if is there some button I should be pushing or something in the controls? I looked through the book. I couldn't find anything offhand. So maybe somebody could who has the 7,000 might know what I'm talking about.
There's at least two others of us with 7,000. So I'm not quite following the question, and I'm just being a little dense. So. Jim, did you catch the question before I asked for clarification?
I didn't understand what he meant by shutting down. Is the radio going off, or is the power supply being shut down? In which case, you'd want to substitute another power supply just to see that RF might be getting into it. But the bad radio, when you say, is it just cutting back or is it turning off?
It's shutting off. The power, the output drops down and shuts off, or maybe it's cutting back to something very low, but it's, you know, it goes way down. Shows the output meter shows no power output.
But is the radio still on?
Yes, the radio is still on. It's not the power supply, I don't believe. Yeah, the radio is still on. It's like as if you worked it into high. If you work the thing into a very high VSWR, it shuts itself off, or maybe just cuts back. I don't remember. I know it does that, but it seems to shut, when I get to 30 or 40 watts, it'll shut down.
Okay, would you say it shuts down at low power? What about at high power?
Well, I can never get to high power. And if I run the thing below 30, 40 watts, it works. But if I start to turn the power up above 30 or 40 watts, it shuts off.
And does it do it into a dummy load with a different piece of coax?
Yes, I definitely tried that.
Okay, and what about if you change out your power supply? Perhaps you're current limited with your power supply.
Well, I've been using this power supply for a couple of years. I had the equipment, and it's a pretty heavy-duty thing. It's a Kenwood, you know, it's a linear supply. And it's if the power supply shut down, I don't understand. You mean it would just cut back on current output? I guess that's possible. Like I said, I've been working this equipment with this power supply for quite a while. I've never had any trouble with it before. I don't know if it has a current limiting feature. It's an old standard heavy-duty linear type supply.
Well, no doubt it has. Well, and it could have changed. But you'd feel real silly if you sent the radio back and found out that the power supply had changed, and the minute you tried to draw more current, that it was cutting back. So that would be one thing to check. And other than that, don't know what to tell you. If you got a different piece of coax that you know is good, and you got a 50 ohm load, you should be able to get regulated power out if you got a good power supply. And if you can't do that, then there's got to be something wrong with the radio.
Hey, Don.
And the possibility that the SWR sensing mechanism has a problem, and looks like you got a bad SWR when your dummy load is all right, and then your sensing mechanism is causing the power to be limited. That's a possibility. I think Pete Daly had that happen in one of his radios one time. Back to net.
Comment.
Well, I don't know how to check that. I can tell you this, that when I run it to the 50 ohm load, the standing wave ratio indicates a perfect match. I don't know why that would be dependent upon the power level, though. It's just that when I hit that particular power level, and bingo, it cuts back. I'll check the, I don't know how to, I'm going to check the current out that have to load the power supply somehow. It's a thought. I'll have to look into the instruction manual that power supply, see if it has that current fallback feature. I don't know if these old linear supplies used to have that fallback feature. Maybe they do. All right, I'll try to look in the instruction manual for the power supply and see if it has a fallback feature. I can't think of anything else. It's 50 ohm load. I even put the ohmmeter out and checked to make sure it's my 50 ohm load was 50 ohms. And it is. So I was hoping somebody with the 7000 might know some adjustment there someplace. I couldn't find it in the manual. AF2, I do with K2BAR.
Constantly with JEK.
Two of you, JEK first, then OK.
Yeah, okay. I was just thinking, Ben, your connections are good to the power supply. It could be a possibility, too, that you have a poor connection and you try to pull current at resistance. At the higher power just won't allow you to do that. That's one thought on it. And you could try that. I guess that's the only other thing, is that you could have a poor connection. I remember... seeing some stuff going on I won't describe here now, where a guy was grounding out a car battery and nothing was, he should have had sparks flying, but he didn't because the battery was had so much corrosion on the terminal. At any rate, that's one other possibility. And do you have another power supply, or that would be the way to prove out your power supply? Back to net, W2JK.
It's a thought. I do have another power supply. I'll switch power supplies. I kind of doubt it's the connection, though, because if the connection was a problem, then the voltage would drop, and the whole thing would go off, or at least lights would dim on the display or something. But it didn't seem to show any indication of a voltage drop. But I will try another power supply. It's an easy way to find out anything wrong with the power supply. It's a good suggestion. I thank you for that one. No, I didn't think of it. Maybe because I forgot I had a second power supply. It's capable of driving this unit. Okay. All right. So you go back to your antennas. This is K2BAR. I'm KF2ID with K2BAR.
2AMI.
Tony.
And before you swap power supplies, have you measured the voltage and monitored it? Because I understand that some of the new radios won't even take a 1 or 1.5 volt drop. They're very sensitive to the full voltage. Measure the voltage at the terminals, and then if you have probes, and you can actually poke your probes in to the connection where the radio, it connects to the back of the radio. You know, maybe you've got a 5 or 6 foot cord there. Make sure that the connections right at the radio have the same voltage that they do back at the terminals. Just with a simple 12-volt measuring voltmeter, you might determine whether or not it's a power supply or not. If there's a drop in voltage, you're in trouble. Back to that.
Comment.
Go ahead, Bennett. Right, so, but like I say, any drop in voltage should show up as some dimming in the display. And there was no dimming in the display at all, just it's rock solid. kind of indicating the voltage is okay. Incidentally, I think this maybe this unit has a voltage monitoring function in it someplace. I sort of vaguely remember that. Okay. Thank you all for your suggestions, gentlemen. This is KF2IDVK2BR.
Comment.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Well, in line with Don and what Tony just said, I do have an ICOM 7000, and it is very voltage sensitive. My ICOM 7000, while the car is running, I can run full power. I shut off the ignition, and just running through a cigarette lighter temporarily, it drops to about 12 volts or a little bit below. The radio, when I try to transmit at full power, will just shut off. No dimming, no nothing. It will just shut off and reboot itself, as if you were just turning on the radio. And in that case, I do have to turn down the power, or I start the car. So you've had some, I think, good indications there, but the radio is very voltage sensitive, and there is no indication of dimming. It just goes out. With that, back to net. KO2, okay.
That's absolutely true, and I've had the same experience. It's a lot of fun when that happens in my truck. Let's see. In fact, I probably should have realized that I was having a regulation problem in my truck. For those, some of you have heard my tale of, well, why the big blue whale wasn't at the meeting on Sunday. I was driving Nancy's truck. But it's because finally the regulation became so irregular that I didn't notice that the battery wasn't getting a proper charge, and next thing you know, you don't have a battery to charge. Here's a pet peeve of mine while I'm on a rant here, and regulation and such. 30 odd years ago, we started to see, maybe close to 40 years ago now, sorry, we started to see generators and alternators have the regulator put inside them, as opposed to be an outside box that was separately maintainable. The single most common failure element in an alternator is the regulator. Nothing else. Unless it's, you know, particularly bad run of alternators or something, or bad design. But, you know, it seems to me that, you know, the $5 part should not be driving the replacement of a $200, nominally speaking, part. But that's just me. Anyway, end of rant. If we want a greener planet, we'll do that. If we want to lower the cost of maintenance, we'll do that. But, again, end of rant. Let's see. What else is going on? Anybody have any more comments about the 7,000 low voltage thing?
I'll replace it with a Kenwood 480 and you won't have that problem.
Why is that?
Because it doesn't do that.
Yeah, well, now I'll lose my early warning system on my bad regulation. Green, grin. Yeah, you're right. I have some radios that aren't as fussy either, Jim, and you're absolutely right. In fact, the extreme case of that is the ICOM 703, not a 706, but a 703, which is designed to run, I guess, down to 9 volts or something. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's really an amazing radio. Those of you who saw my little tiny 12-volt batteries, well, they sag pretty quick to 11-something, and then they run there for a very, very long time. And that it really does work very, very well with the 703. Would not work well with a 7000, and probably, dare I say, it wouldn't work well with a 480 or anything else. Any other comments here? Okay, okay. Anybody else? Alrighty. Any other questions for the net? We've managed to run it up to just short of 10 o'clock. That's not bad. I'll take that. It's worth. I want to thank everybody for checking in the net. Does anybody have any announcements they would like to make tonight before we go?
W2JK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Okay, our next, Barr's next VE session will be on Friday the 15th. It's a week from tomorrow, 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School, classroom 123.
Awesome. Alrighty, any other comments? Alrighty. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining the net tonight. We had a really good turnout. I did actually want to ask one question before we go. Think about it. I wanted to ask N2VKZ Gary if he would tell us what he has in the way of equipment and what bands he likes to cover and what he wants to do in amateur radio. But I guess the supposition is that he has to still be there. Well, we'll cross that bridge another day. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. It was a lot of fun tonight. I'm trying to remember how many. I didn't count everybody, how many people were here. But I can tell you that in a second. There were 15 of us, which is pretty outstanding. I want to thank everybody for a lively net, good discussion on a variety of fronts, and enjoy. This is W2TTT for K2BAR, thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater, encouraging people to support both the Bergen FM Association and also Chestnut Ridge, who graciously let us use their repeaters for the nets, for our nets. And our next net will be Monday on 28375, where at 9 p.m. on 10 meters. So we'll see you Monday there. And I think there's coffee tomorrow morning at the Primus Park. And hopefully some people will get out to that too as well. 73 all, and have a good one. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, Santa Clara.